Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The 2015 Paris Agreement set a goal to keep global temperature rise below 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit. It was adopted by nearly 200 nations, but governments are not on track to meet the goal, according to UN official Patricia Espinosa. Here she is speaking before climate change talks in Bangkok on Sunday.
We have witnessed really devastating impacts of climate change in all regions of the world, including in Asia. They are now more evident than ever. This summer, we have witnessed the droughts, the wildfires, extreme heat in many places, and it was also matched with unprecedented monsoons and flooding in other places. UNICEF has said over the weekend that this is a scenario where we are looking at a vision of the world that we are creating for future generations. And I sincerely
And that is UN official Patricia Espinosa speaking before climate change talks in Bangkok on Sunday. The Global Action Climate Summit kicks off next week here in San Francisco, and world leaders from around the globe will be in town for this. There will also be massive demonstrations on the streets, and we'll be talking with climate activists about that next week. If you want more information about what's happening, a number of events are happening this weekend. The Green Film Fest is taking part by highlighting films about water, fire, and air. The festival runs from September 6th through the 13th. And today we are joined by two filmmakers. Documentary filmmaker Anne Flatte directed Symphony for Nature. Anne Flatte has worked on many independent documentaries and has focused on music-related subjects over the last 15 years. The documentary Symphony for Nature is currently available on PBS. Just head over to the website or check your listings for information. And Anne joins me in studio. Hi, Anne. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
It's great to have you. With Stephen Most, today's other guest, Kevin White, created the documentary Wilder Than Wild, Fire, Forests, and the Future. Kevin White is an award-winning producer, director, and writer, and Wilder Than Wild will be on PBS, hopefully in the near future. And Kevin also joins us in studio. Hi, Kevin. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Great to have you. I want to start off by asking you both about your role as filmmakers, because after the election, we, like so many, were racking our brains thinking, all right, what's next? How are we going to cover this? And so we decided to dedicate every Monday to environmental issues with our One Planet series, because we knew that the media were going to be focused on the tweets and all that, and that's exactly what happened. So I wonder, Anne, you've been making films and working on music-related subjects for 15 years. How are you thinking about these issues, and how does it affect the things that you decide to focus on?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think one that every artist or person is asking themselves after the election, depending on how they felt about the outcome. And I feel like making films is a very good response to the situation. In terms of like creating connections between people, I feel like what's missing in our world is like empathy and connections between people. And that's one of the reasons why I love focusing on films about artists and musicians in particular, is I feel like music has a way of connecting people, a nonverbal way of connecting people that is very, very powerful and emotional and positive. You know, and I think we need more positive energy in the world right now, and less yelling about everything. We're just like, you know, shutting people out, not wanting to listen to people. And so music is all about listening and opening yourselves up. And so that's why I feel pretty, you know, I feel like the films that I'm working on, I mean, this film was made before the election. But, you know, I feel like it stands as a beautiful testament to what can happen when a group of very diverse people come together to do something wonderful, you know, in honor of nature. Mm-hmm. It's like, so I feel like that's inspiring.
And your film, Symphony for Nature, is a visual and orchestral documentary about natural history that takes place near Crater Lake, which is absolutely gorgeous. It's a beautiful film.
Yes, it's about, you know, Crater Lake is really the star of the film. And the story follows a extraordinary concert that takes place on the rim of the lake. And the piece was commissioned in honor of the lake, inspired by Crater Lake, written by the composer Michael Gordon. And it brought together classical musicians with drummers from the Klamath tribes and community choir and community brass and percussion ensembles, over 130 musicians together on the rim of the lake. So we'll talk more about it.
It's such a beautiful film. What about you, Kevin? How is this time affecting your work and what you choose to focus on?
It's complicated, certainly. I mean, I've made a lot of films dealing with environmental issues, and I guess I wish I could say I'm hopeful about all of that, but I think it's a time of raising awareness. And I think one of the challenges about making films about environmental topics is that a lot of folks, you know, it can be overwhelming. It can be overwhelming to, you know, how they impact folks. And I think it's really important as filmmakers to show two parts of that story. One, the human story. You know, what does this mean to those that are affected by these issues, and give it context. And then two, try to find some stories about solutions and positive. Mm-hmm. And so obviously right now, wildfires are on everybody's mind. And we started our film back in 2013 when the Rim Fire happened. And the Rim Fire features prominently kind of as a case study in our film. And back then, it was like it was this wake-up call of this kind of large scale fire in a forest that I love. I spent a lot of time up there. My family has a cabin up there. And I was like, what's going on? And I think what I realized was the Sierra Nevada have evolved with fire over millennia, but it tended to be historically lower and moderate intensity fire, not high severity fire like much of the Rim Fire. Like a much higher percentage of the Rim Fire was high severity. So I realized this is a different kind of fire, and it kind of started us on this journey to tell this story. And the story is not always pretty, and I think we can't shy away from that. But ultimately, I'm trying to raise, you know, Steve Most, my fellow producer, and I are trying to raise awareness about new ways to rethink our relationship to wildfire. Mm-hmm. We've kept it out of our state for years in a lot of ways, and we have to rethink a lot of this. And so on one side, we have a role as, you know, raising awareness. And obviously with wildfire, there's visuals to it that can kind of complement that process. And on the other side, we tried to tell stories that have some solutions and some positive messages for us to, so that we don't feel hopeless in the face of these walls of flames.
You know, what I loved about your film is how you connected the dots and really explained how this works, because we have done so many shows about fires, and we have on fire managers and firefighters and people talking about managing fires, about drought, about the beetle outbreak. But hearing it and seeing it are two different things. I feel like now I have such a better grasp of how this actually works after seeing your film. But hearing these scientists talk about the drought and the brush, you try to visualize it, but it can be kind of difficult.
It is a really good topic for film, no question. And you know that as soon as you're out there. And, you know, obviously fire is incredibly visual, but I will say one thing. There's nothing replacing the experience of seeing a wall of fire consume a forest right in front of you. I mean, you know, chasing those fires and seeing some of that footage and the footage we got in the Wine Country fires afterwards. I mean, it's just heartbreaking. And there's no way to say it other than that. And I think film does a good job. I mean, one thing the media does is we're seeing lots of visuals of fires. But you're right. it's better to show context. And in some cases, fire is a really important element to have. And
right.
we, you know, all of these ecosystems evolved with fire in California. So we need to talk about that. And it's not something always to be afraid of. There's ways to how do we live with it? So that's part of that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And seeing it gives you such a different perspective. Crater Lake, for example, so it's in south central Oregon. And I'm sure many of us have seen these beautiful photos of Crater Lake, and it's always been on my list. I really want to go to Crater Lake. But after seeing it, it's such a different experience. And I also appreciate your focus on appreciating the natural world and getting out and experiencing the natural world and also learning the history of the place that we're in.
Yes, I would agree also with Kevin that, you know, film does an amazing job of showing a cinematic subject like Crater Lake or other, you know, parts of the natural world or fire. You know, but to go there in person is also highly, highly recommended. So if it's on your list, please go. It's a spectacular lake. It is the deepest lake in the United States, and it's completely fed by precipitation. There's no rivers going in or out, and it was formed 7,700 years ago by a huge volcanic explosion. A mountain used to be there, and then it collapsed. So yeah, there's lots to talk about with the history. And one of the things I wanted to do in the film is, you know, the main story is about this group of very talented musicians brought together by the Brit Music and Arts Festival, conducted by Teddy Abrams, to put on this concert. You know, it's one of those stories, like everybody get together and put on a show. And then I wanted to weave the sense of time that you get when you go to a stunning natural wonder like this. Or you go to the ocean, you get a sense of the timelessness of the planet, you know, and how small human beings are in the big picture. And, you know, one of the things that the composer of the piece did was research the history of the lake, you know, spent a lot of time at the lake, met with the Klamath tribes, learned about their music, went there in the winter, it's in snow 7 months a year, went there in the summer, felt what was going on with the wildlife there. And I wanted to follow in his footsteps and show that visually and weave in, you know, the creation story of Crater Lake according to the Klamath people, the geological explanation of how this lake came to be, the personal journey of the first photographer who went to Crater Lake and took the first photograph of Crater Lake in 1874, that then led to the creation of Crater Lake National Park. You know, artists were very important in the creation of some of these national parks over the years. And to talk about both the histories, both the Klamath history, which is thousands of years old, and, you know, the white settler history, which is like 200 years old, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and the evolution of thought about nature that we as people living in this space have come to. And the composer Michael Gordon, you know, included quotes from Henry David Thoreau, other naturalists and philosophers who he had studied to come to his understanding of these perspectives on nature. So the film kind of weaves between the present day story and the past context of the lake, all in half an hour.
One of the things I think is so important is that this notion that art and doing a project with a creative visuals and audio, it brings the audience closer to that natural place, to that place. And if you can get a sense of that place, you will start to develop appreciation for place. Mm. And so when you look at all, for example, the photographs of Yosemite that are so well known, those had a huge impact on people recognizing that that's a very special place. And when you start to tell that story, people open their minds, they open their hearts, and they start to realize, wow, maybe we need to rethink our ways to preserve and conserve this special place. Mm. Crater Lake is miraculous. I mean, it was one of those places when you first see it, you just feel it, right? In my experience anyway. And I, you know, it's such a great premise to do that. And I, you know, I think the more we connect audiences to, you know, a sense of place, then the better we will be.
Yeah. And I also want to say that, you know, Crater Lake is a sacred place for the Klamath people. This is their sacred place where they would go for vision quests along the way. And they don't go up there to, you know, play around, as Taylor says in the film. You know, it's a very it has deep religious significance for them. So so I feel like that sacredness comes through, you know, for anybody who goes there, if they're paying attention.
Anne Flatte is the director of Symphony for Nature, a visual and orchestral documentary about natural history. And Kevin White and Stephen Most created the documentary Wilder Than Wild, Fire, Forests, and the Future, a film examining the growing intensity of wildfires in the West. Symphony for Nature is currently available on PBS. And if you're in the Bay Area, you can see Symphony for Nature as part of the San Francisco Green Film Festival this Saturday at 4 p.m. at the Cal Theater in Fort Mason. You can also see Wilder Than Wild on Saturday at 5:30 p.m., and Wilder Than Wild will eventually be on PBS. And if you have any questions or comments for our guest today, if you have any recommendations for environmental films, we are really facing unprecedented change in the world. What role do environmental films play in raising awareness about what we're facing, and then really pressuring people who are making decisions to do something? I mean, that is really important here. We'll talk more about that throughout the show. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. If you're a filmmaker, an artist, a storyteller, and you focus on the environmental crisis that we're currently facing, how are you tackling these issues? 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. And since you were telling us about the Klamath tribe and their relationship to Crater Lake, I want to play a clip from your film. But before I do that, can you tell us about the Steiger Butte Singers? And they will actually be at the screening on Saturday, which is really exciting. Tell us about the Steiger Butte Singers.
Yes. Yeah, so the Steiger Butte Singers are a five-generation family drum that has been playing traditional and contemporary music on the drum for five generations, and so they are the drum group that participated in the world premiere of Natural History at the edge of Crater Lake 2 years ago. And so yes, they are one of the incredibly special things about this screening is that they are coming to perform live with the film. So before the film plays, they are going to play a song. And then afterwards, after the film is over, they will also play more. And this is a really incredible experience. They did come to Louisville, Kentucky to perform the piece, the orchestral piece, live. And we did a screening like this. And it's very, very, very powerful to hear them firsthand. So I highly, highly recommend, please join us for this screening.
And again, that screens this Saturday at 4 o'clock at the Cal Theater in Fort Mason in San Francisco. We're going to hear a clip from the documentary Symphony for Nature. You will hear from Teddy Abrams, Brit Orchestra Music Director, and Taylor Tupper. She's with the Steiger Butte Singers and a member of the Klamath Tribe.
The piece is called Natural History, and so much of the piece really is actually about nature, and it's about our relationship to the natural world, and in a way that I didn't realize would be quite as philosophical. And I think it starts with the tribe, because their relationship to nature and their way of celebrating nature through music is so deeply spiritual for them.
Because Crater Lake is in our Aboriginal territories, the Klamath tribes was asked to be a part of this celebration for the centennial. We don't go up there very often because it is a spiritual place, and we're told by our elders that it's not a place to go and mess around, that it's a place to come for ceremony or power, or if you need something. We don't read sheet music. We don't learn that way.
Okay, good.
We was thinking, how's it going to work? Jackie is talented enough, and she wrote it out visually, had Teddy help her write that out, and then the rest of the singers just watch her.
It's a really complex textural work of music. It's a long piece, too. It's 25 minutes.
That is a clip from the documentary Symphony for Nature, a visual and orchestral documentary about natural history. And in that clip, you heard from Teddy Abrams, Brit Orchestra music director, and Taylor Tupper, Steiger Butte Singers member and also member of the Klamath tribe. And if you are in the Bay Area, you can see Symphony for Nature this Saturday at 4 o'clock at the Cal Theater in Fort Mason. The Steiger Butte Singers will also be there performing. And if you're not in the Bay Area, luckily you can also see the film on PBS. Just check your listings. Today we're also joined by Kevin White, creator of the documentary Wilder Than Wild, Fire, Forests, and the Future. And you can see Wilder Than Wild also this Saturday at 5:30, and that will eventually be on PBS. Today we are talking about some films that will be shown with the San Francisco Green Film Fest. You know, I have to say, I really appreciate that you both really did focus on natives. Now, both of your films, you would think, well, obviously they would focus on natives, but not every film that you think should focus on natives does. In fact, it happens too often. So I just want to say thank you for that, because, you know, we need more of that.
Such a critical part of the story.
Yeah.
I mean, in the case of Wildfire, it's inspirational to watch the Yurok tribe. We have a scene where they have a cultural burn, and for the first time, they're working with Cal Fire. So we're getting, you know, a big agency working with them, and they do this cultural burn together, and I think it's very impactful. And Elizabeth Azuz, who's from the Yurok, will actually be at our screening. And as will Tommy Wilson, who's also featured in the film, and as well as some firefighters and some other folks, too. We find that it's always great when you show these films to have a panel afterwards where you can really dig into some of the content. And particularly with Wildfire, there's so much fear around that. And what can we do? Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of big question. And you can start to have, in a panel, you can start to answer that. So hopefully we'll have some of that conversation at the Green Film Fest at our screening. The tribes, I will say, you know, for millennia, they were doing prescribed burns. You know, they were, like Tommy Wilson has this comment where he says, well, I'm going to take, you know, my grandmother used to give me a pack of matches. She used to tell me to go light that hill on fire, would you? And remarkably, it worked well, and they didn't have any crazy wildfires evolve from that kind of informal burning, at least that he knew of or could remember. And so it was just interesting. This is a tradition that we've lost. And when settlers came, the first inclination was, look at all that bored feet. You know, with the creation of the Forest Service and a lot of pressure to make homes for all of the growing population, we ended up really being invested in making sure we have a lot of timber. So all of a sudden, after a few big fires that killed a lot of firefighters, they said, we're going to try to put those fires out right away, the 10 a.m. policy, so to speak. And once they did that, it created almost 100 years of fire suppression. Mm. So when you have 100 years of fire suppression kind of embodied in Smokey Bear, it becomes complicated. You know, you have a lot of fuel that leads to more intense fires. There's a lot of things we can do to address that in our forests, but the number one challenge we're facing is that we've had 100 years of fire suppression. And listening to the tribal elders talk about their relationship to wildfire is just such a breath of fresh air. And I will say, the firefighters that listen to them as well, and the audiences, they really respond because they can see the wisdom of it.
Mm. Kevin White and Stephen Most created the documentary Wilder Than Wild, Fire, Forests, and the Future. It examines the growing intensity of wildfires in the West. Anne Flatte is director of Symphony for Nature, a visual and orchestral documentary about natural history, specifically Crater Lake. It's a beautiful film. You can find more information about these films at yourcallradio.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up on our media roundtable, we will be discussing coverage of next week's Global Climate Action Summit in San Francisco. Grassroots counter gatherings have already begun. Also, it's been more than 2 months since EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt was forced to resign. Remember Scott Pruitt? Well, what do we need to know about the new EPA chief, Scott Wheeler? And then we're also going to discuss coverage of the nationwide prison strike, which ends this weekend. What progress has been made towards the 10 demands raised by people behind bars? Today, we are talking about the power of environmental films. The Green Film Fest is highlighting films about water, fire, and air. It runs in San Francisco from September 6th through the 13th. And today, we are joined by Anne Flatte. She directed the film Symphony for Nature. And you can see that if you're in the Bay Area this Saturday at 4 o'clock. It'll be at the Cal Theater at Fort Mason. And then Kevin White created the documentary Wilder Than Wild, Fire, Forest, and the Future. And that will screen this Saturday at 5:30. Symphony for Nature is also on PBS. So if you're not in the area, you can see it on PBS. And Wilder Than Wild will eventually be on PBS. Before the break, Kevin, we were talking about the Yurok tribe. And you mentioned Tommy Wilson. He's a member of the Yuroks. It's California's largest tribe. And you visited him to talk about tribal fire management. And you briefly touched on it before, but what else did you learn?
Well, you know, I mean, there's a long tradition, obviously, of the tribes thinking about ways to use fire and just using fire as a tool in places that they lived. And for a whole lot of reasons. But inevitably, what we're finding now is fast forward to 2018, and we are seeing that the wisdom of that, the science wisdom of that as well. You know, and Tommy talks about it. He talks about, as a child, how he's seen the landscape change. So it went from having lots of meadows, having forests with less trees per acre, to actually having forests with a lot more conifers that have actually shaded. And he talks about this, about the bears and, you know, how the shade actually, you know, prevents some of the vegetation, the berries and things like that. Huckleberries is what he refers to, and how that, you know, whenever you change one thing in these forests, it's going to have an impact on the rest of the forest. Mm-hmm. And he's so clear about what that means. And in his lifetime, he's seen these forests change. And so, one thing that was really interesting is that the Yurok tribe had a choice, but they had some money that they could spend on a project. And they had a choice about what they could spend it on. You know, should they get some other infrastructure stuff? There was, you know, a store. There was all kinds of options. They all chose to do cultural fire, to do traditional cultural fire. Hmm. And that, I think, is a great – I mean, how many communities are thinking like that? That's a lesson we could learn. That's a lesson we could learn.
Well, let's hear a clip from your film, Wilder Than Wild, Fire, Forest, and the Future. And in this clip, you will hear from Tommy Wilson, a member of the Yurok tribe, California's largest tribe. He lives in the Klamath River Basin. You will also hear from Mark Finney, a research scientist with the Missoula Fire Science Lab in Montana.
When I was a young man, there was a lot of grasslands in this valley here. They're all been overtaken by conifer because of the lack of traditional cultural fire. I had two brothers. My grandmother, she used to give us a book of matches apiece, said, go up on a hill, burn that hillside off. And that kept our world in balance. And the cop told us either we're going to have to stop this or they threatened us to throw us in jail. We got too much fuel on the ground that if we get a catastrophic fire in here, we're in big trouble.
we are having larger fires because we are reaping the benefits of removing fire from the landscape. And so we've now set ourselves up to have landscapes very continuous in fuels, that when fires start 20 miles away, they literally can move all across that landscape in one burning period, one day.
I went to the Fire Sciences Lab in Missoula to find out how wildfire spreads.
Throughout human history, you're talking 500,000 years or something, people have been using fire. And yet, we really haven't understood how fire spreads. How does fire behave?
Fire is like a liquid. It flows. Every wildfire is a unique mix of fuel, heat, and weather. When it's windy, embers can travel for miles through forests or onto rooftops. This is how wildfires jump highways and take over entire landscapes.
And that voice is Kevin White, who created the documentary with Stephen Most, Wilder Than Wildfire, Forests and the Future. You also heard from Tommy Wilson, a member of the Yurok tribe in the Klamath River Basin, and Mark Finney, research scientist with the Missoula Fire Science Lab in Montana. And as you said before the break, Kevin, the Yurok tribe is, well, I should say Cal Fire is now working with the Yurok tribe on managed burns. When did they start this?
Just recently, actually.
Just recently.
Yeah, I mean, last year, 2016. But the point is that we actually had a meeting with Ken Pimlott, who's the head of Cal Fire and the chief of Cal Fire, and he was so excited about working with the tribes. That's something he really wants to see more of and, you know, dedicating some resources there because I think he sees the wisdom of it. You know, it's apparent. And, that's a good sign because I think that's something that we need more of. And it's nice, I think, for the tribe to be recognized for their tradition that is both scientifically sound and ecologically sound.
Right, because I was really struck by this line from Tommy Wilson when he said, the cop told us either stop this or we'll throw you in jail.
I think, you know, unfortunately that attitude towards probably Native teenagers was replicated all over the place. Mm-hmm. And yet look at the wisdom of it. And so at least now we can at least have that point of view.
Do you know if this is happening in other areas in the country?
I know a lot of the tribes, certainly in California, I've talked to other folks, the Kashaya and a couple of other tribes that are absolutely invested in looking forward to doing more cultural burns. Yeah. More, you know, prescribed burns in cultural tradition.
Kevin White is creator of the documentary Wilder Than Wild. Anne Flatte directed Symphony for Nature. And if you have any questions or comments for our guests about environmental films, if there's one that you would like to share with us, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Let's talk about the productions of your films, because so much goes into making films. I think that we're all bombarded with information on a daily basis that we forget how much time actually goes into filmmaking.
Yes.
Right, Anne?
Yes, yes. I think in the case of this film, Symphony for Nature, yeah, there's so many people involved in making a film. It's quite amazing. I'm always... You know, when you see those credits roll at the end, it's just like all those people really did a lot, you know. And so, you know, in our case, all the filming happened at Crater Lake. And it was a world premiere situation, which is kind of a one-time-only event that the crew needs to not, you know, we really were... you know, we didn't have a lot of time to prepare, and then we were on it, and I'm just so proud of my crew, the camera people, and especially my sound recordist, Richard Fleming, who was sweating buckets at the field recording of this concert. It's kind of like a huge... In the park, there's no electricity or cell phone service. And also, we had not heard the piece until we arrived there for the first week of rehearsal. Basically, they rehearsed the piece that week, and then they performed it. That's kind of how it worked. And so I remember, you know, it was kind of a big risk to make a film about a piece of music that you hadn't heard, actually, you know, because you're hoping it's going to be great. And I remember the first day both going to Crater Lake and, you know, the weather was with us, and then going to the rehearsal and the piece was unbelievably powerful and rich and layered and amazing. And so we all just were like, this is awesome. It's going to be great. So, and then the whole film was, all the post-production happened here in San Francisco. And so a lot of people here in San Francisco worked on the film. It was edited by Jeff Boyette. It was produced by Owsley Brown. It was a co-production of Brit Music and Arts Festival and Owsley Brown Presents, and Southern Oregon Public Television was the presenting station. So all these people came together to make this film possible. And I just want to call out Mark Escott, who did sound design. He's here in San Francisco as well. And I'm sure there's many others I'm forgetting, but I thank them all. And what, so, yeah.
What does it take to get a film on PBS these days?
Well, in our case, we were really fortunate through another producer who worked on the film, Dan Hamby, my colleague. He helped us with getting Southern Oregon Public Television involved at a very early stage. And so that was very helpful. And I think it does take, I mean, I think there's many ways to get on PBS. There's no one way. I'm sure Kevin knows. It's just like at any stage you can really do it. And there's many different ways to get on it. So I feel like it's really great to have that kind of distribution. Mm-hmm. Because so many films are made that unfortunately so few people see. And
exactly.
And that's really, you know, for such a large effort, it's really a shame.
So, I was thinking this would be great to be shown in film in schools.
Yeah.
For youth.
Yeah.
You know, especially in communities of color.
Yeah.
Maybe for young Native youth.
Yeah,
it would
like
be great
any
to
musicians,
be shown.
Young, you know, so right. Many children take music lessons and they want to see, you know, what could happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it has many applications. And so, yeah, it is available. I think they can through PBS.org, you know, get it.
I mean, the one thing I'd say about PBS in general, independent filmmakers have a lot of options right now. There's a lot of different platforms. And what's so interesting is that films can be very successful on some of the on-demand platforms, obviously. I mean, people think about Netflix, but it's beyond that. I mean, there's all kinds of other platforms. There's a platform that's for colleges and universities called Canopy and libraries, and that's a very important platform. So we're talking with them right now about Wilder Than Wild being on their platform. And I think part of this is whenever you do an outreach, we actually really believe in the power of shared screenings, shared viewing. Mm. You know, we believe in the power of community screenings and getting people together. Mm-hmm. And then that, you know, it kind of ignites this opportunity for discussion, and that can lead to impact, and kind of an engaged audience can really do good things, I think. So, but beyond that, I think that it's also really important. You know, PBS is, it's complicated because if you want to do a national feed, you typically want to find a sponsor. You typically want to find, you know, a lot of work goes into that. You work very closely with the stations to do a release on a national feed, which means you have to contact all these program directors because each station runs kind of their own, has their own programming, mm-hmm. right? You're probably pretty aware of that challenge. And I think it's one of these things where we need to make sure that we can reach our audience in a variety of ways. And usually it starts with having partners, like nonprofits and nonprofit agencies and NGOs, whoever, that really are connected to the content. And we've been working really closely with a lot of the government and NGOs for the wildfire film.
Well, I was going to ask you, I hope that government officials see this, because these are shocking statistics. In 1995, firefighting took up 16% of the U.S. Forest Service budget, 16%. In 2017, firefighting took up 55% of the budget. The budget is $2.4 billion. The estimated damage of Western wildfires last year, $18 billion.
Yeah, that's actually conservative, probably.
Wow.
I mean, it's nutty, right?
And
I mean, there's a lot of reasons for this. Just, I mean, that's a big topic. But I would say just one, we've had a century of fire suppression. Two, we have people living in places. Yeah. And the kind of so-called wildland urban areas, they have that acronym, the WUI, the Wildland Urban Interface. But we have a lot more people living in the wildland urban areas. So they're fire prone. And when it's fire prone, all of a sudden we have these catastrophic fires to people and property. And that, you know, we were talking about production. We actually were focusing pretty kind of exclusively on forest fires. And then we had a rough cut on October 18th. We had a rough cut on October 8th, and on October 9th, we woke up in the morning, like everybody in the Bay Area, and we smelled smoke. Mm-hmm. And the Wine Country wildfires overnight, catastrophic, right? And we realized we had to explore more, why did this happen, and what can we do about it? And so we went back into production. And, you know, it was like a four-year journey, right? So we went back into production and re-edited and restructured the film, really. And, you know, I have to say my fellow producer, Steve Most, and our editor, Gina Lebrecht, they encouraged me to make this kind of more of a first-person film. And I was a little nervous about that. I don't really want, you know, it's not, I like to be behind the camera. But I think that they made a good point because it was a journey. And I think having the perspective, sometimes when you understand the perspective of the person taking you on that journey, it can bring audiences closer to a story. So kicking and screaming, they drugged me into that, and I'm glad they did. You know, I really feel like, you know, making a film about wildfire is like making a film about air or water. And so these are elements that are central to our life on Earth, and, you know, we have to think about context for understanding them.
And you mentioned the people who in the U.S. who live in and around forests, grasslands, and shrublands in your film. That number is 100 million.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
And a high percentage of that is fire prone. Not all of it, but a high percentage of it. And what's interesting about that is you think, oh, well, people want to go live in nature because it's beautiful and that's a great place and they have these great big homes in nature and that's lovely. There's a lot of folks that live there for economic reasons. It's less expensive to get property there. And so these wildfires have displaced a lot of people and a lot of working class and middle class folks. And I think that is important not to get lost in this conversation.
Very important. Kevin White created the documentary Wilder Than Wild, Fire, Forests, and the Future. And Anne Flatey is director of Symphony for Nature. Find more information about these films. You can see the trailers and find screenings at yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from a few callers. Let's go to Alice in Oakland. Hi, Alice. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how's it going? I'm a professor of environmental science at St. Mary's College and out in Moraga. And two movies that I show my students and that we've had screenings of at St. Mary's that I really like are The Return of the River, about the Elwha River, and I really appreciate how that movie goes into the indigenous cultures and talking about the removal of the Elwha Dam. And I would love to see a follow-up to that movie to sort of watch how the river has come back after the removal of that dam. And then the other one is the Russian River, All Rivers. I don't have the full name, but that one was available on PBS as well, I think, and has done some and they've done some screenings around the Bay Area as well, and that's really goes into all about the Russian River and that watershed and the mining on that river and the health of the salmon. And and I'm really excited about the wildfire movie. That's something that my students have done work with the Tuolumne River Trust in the restoration of the Rim Fire. And so, we're always looking for new movies to show and to screen at St. Mary's. So I'm really excited about this show today.
Great. Thank you, Alice.
Yeah, Patrick from the Tuolumne River Trust is featured, has a role in our film, and actually will also be at the screening on Saturday at 5:30 at the Cowell Theater in Fort Mason. So, there's a lot of folks doing really great work that are kind of behind these stories.
Yeah, I want to just add to that. I mean, I'm looking at the Green Festival lineup, and I'm so excited to and honored that that Symphony for Nature is included in this lineup, because there are so many films I'm looking forward to seeing about either filmmakers bearing witness to a particular element or struggle, or and so tonight, you know, I'm going to the opening night film Into the Okavango. And I'm looking forward to seeing the Walter Munch film, because my father was actually a physicist, and this is the film about the stingrays and Walter Munch, who's a scientist. And so I'm excited about that. And also, I noticed, I don't know if we've talked about it yet, but the Coal and Ice Photography Exhibition is a co-sponsor of our lineup of films. You know, Kevin's film plays right after Symphony for Nature, and it's right next door to the Festival Pavilion at Fort Mason, where this immense photographic exhibition called Coal and Ice is up right now, which looks amazing. I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
Great time to visit Fort Mason.
Yeah.
What are you looking forward to, just briefly, Kevin?
There's a film called Point of No Return, made by Bay Area-based filmmakers, about the solar flight across the ocean. That's really fascinating.
Solar flight?
It kind of takes you. There's a plane that they did that they built a plane, and they did a flight across. You know, big project, obviously, but they go across the ocean, and in the process, you see that kind of behind the scenes of how does this work. And what's interesting is that, you know, you realize you're witnessing history. You know, you're witnessing history. I mean, this is something that, you know, if we can develop this technology better, I think it's a great film, and Bay Area filmmakers. And, of course, the Jim Ballack here, it's called The Human Element, and that's a film I'm really looking forward to seeing. Because he looks at how climate change is impacting people and place in a lot of different ways. And he really kind of, that thing about connecting the dots, he's just an amazing photographer. And watching him do his work and tell his story as he sees the landscape is pretty remarkable.
The San Francisco Green Film Fest runs from September 6th, which is today, through the 13th, if you're in the Bay Area. If you're not in the Bay Area, check out the website, because there's so many great films. Some of them you can probably find online, or possibly find out when they will be playing in your area. We have time for one more caller. If you can be brief, let's hear from Greg in East Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I just had some questions about the cultural file. There's a couple of things. One, the only details that I heard mentioned was that they send kids up in the hills with books of matches, and there's got to be more to it than that. And what are the parameters they use to control fires? And secondly, you mentioned collaboration with CAL FIRE, and so how many fires have they started collaborating with the Klamath Indians or on these kind of cultural fires, and how they work out? Thanks.
It was the Yurok tribe, and Elizabeth Azuz is in charge of fire management for the tribe. And she and her colleagues organized what they call a cultural burn with CAL FIRE in their native lands. And I think I'm not sure how many acres. I want to say maybe 200, 250 acres, something like that. But the point was that they, you know, there's all kinds of environmental guidelines you have to follow in order to do a prescribed fire. And so you have to clear it with the Air Resource Board. You have to make sure it's not too dry. It's not too warm. There's all kinds of things you have to do to make sure that the fire is containable and won't leave the fire line. And so there's a lot of work that goes into this. One could argue that prescribed burning is maybe the most important single thing we can do for our forests right now. And it's interesting. I mean, in Florida, now they have very different ecosystems, a very different system, but they had 1.2 million acres of prescribed burn last year. And in California, I think we had something like 50,000 acres. Wow. So again, California is a much more complicated dynamic, and there's a lot more people living in wooded areas, and air pollution and smog and smoke and all that stuff is part of that story. But the bigger issue is that we need to rethink our relationship to wildfire and start to maybe think about ways to get more fire on the landscape.
Well, that's one other reason why I love the film, because if you're not, if you don't have much experience with fire, prescribed fire, what does that look like? And you showed it, and it's basically just kind of a mellow fire. It's not too high, and it's just burning, and you can tell that it's very manageable, that it's not going to take off like so many of these wildfires that we've seen.
Well, there are a lot of tools in the toolkit. Right? And prescribed fire is one. Thinning is another. That can be controversial sometimes, but a lot of times they will go thin the smaller trees and the kind of the ladder fuels, as they call them, so that fires don't go up into the bigger trees. Also creates more room for larger trees to grow. And I think that, you know, the big thing is in areas that are fire prone, we have to rethink how we are planning our developments in our communities. I mean, we have to rethink where we build homes.
Right.
And do we want to think about building homes that are can plan for wildfires? And, you know, wildfires are here to stay. So I think ultimately we're going to be thinking about it like earthquake insurance.
Exactly. And everyone in the film said we've never seen this before. This is our new norm. And we're going to continue to do shows about this because it's so, so important. Kevin White created the documentary with Stephen Most. It's called Wilder Than Wild, Fire, Forests, and the Future. And if you're in the Bay Area, you can see it this Saturday at the San Francisco Green Festival. It's at 5:30. Anne Flatte directed Symphony for Nature. It's a beautiful film about natural history. It's about musicians who play at the Crater Lake. Gorgeous, gorgeous film. And Symphony for Nature will be screening this Saturday at 4 p.m. It is also currently available on PBS, so check your listings, and Wilder Than Wild will eventually be on PBS. Kevin and Anne, thank you so much for all the work you do, and thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks to Laura Flynn for producing today's show, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.